Save big money and start your spring project with help from Menards. We offer a huge selection of Bonnie plants, veggies, and herbs to plant at home and grow yourself. Right now, all Bonnie 4.5-inch vegetable and herbs are on sale through May 17th. Head to the Menards Garden Center to get your garden growing. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
Hi everyone, it's Gavin J, the best thing since daffodils, and you're listening to the Therapy Suite right here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio. This week, I speak to Sarah Harrison, who has set up a charity called Sarah's Stars. We'll be discussing incurable illnesses and how to manage. Sarah, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks very much for having me.
Pleasure to have you on the show. Sarah, tell us a bit about your background and, you know, how you got to where you are today.
So, it wasn't planned, obviously, but I was diagnosed with breast cancer 7 years ago and went through treatment for that and went back to work, went back to life as normal, wasn't actually poorly at all when I went for a scan to make sure that everything was okay to have a reconstruction. And that's when they noticed that cancer had come back, and this time it was incurable and inoperable. So from there, things took a turn really quite quickly. And it's interesting because, like I said, I wasn't unwell. But it does make me wonder about the psychological side of things. Because once they really started getting into it and figuring out exactly where the cancer was and what was going on, that's when I started to feel more pain. And, you know, really, that's when the palliative care team came in and things actually really went downhill quite fast. So yeah, I ended up here because my experience, I just like to share it because I was in palliative care for a while and then got signed off, but always know that they're there for me. So I'm a real advocate for the palliative care team and McMullen nurses. And yeah, I just thought I'm not done yet. So I had to take ill health retirement from work. But I just have this real thing about having a sense of purpose and what it can do for you in life. And so that's where the idea sprung about Sarah Star, and that main backbone of it is very much a sense of purpose, something for my family, something for my friends, and something for other people with incurable illness, not specific to cancer. Because I also recognize that there is a gap there where there's a lot of funding and there's a lot of things that are done for cancer. But, you know, there's a lot that isn't done for other illnesses. So I just wanted to open it up a little bit more. And so that's where Sarah's Star was born. And now we've got our room and we just have a lovely service where quite a few people are starting to come in because we're fairly new. We just set up properly in January. So, yeah, that's where we are now.
Fantastic. Look, thank you for sharing that with us. You know, really appreciate, you know, the information, you know, about yourself and your background and what's been happening. It's strange because I've heard that from other people as well, whereby you're told something and it's the mind starts working on it. It's almost like, do you know what I mean? And yeah, it's quite, and like you rightly said, you didn't feel any real symptoms. And it's only when you were diagnosed and people were, the professionals were talking to you more and more about it, it's almost like your mind kind of started focusing on that, you know?
Yeah. It's really interesting because, you know, I always laugh because the day I had my scan, that night I went out with my friends and I danced the night away. And 3 days later, I found out this news. And it just, you know, it wasn't like, it took a few months, but I gradually deteriorated. And I do, it does make me believe in the power of the mind. It really does.
Absolutely. I've watched documentaries. I've heard stories where there was one person I remember. They refused to feel that they're ill because they didn't feel it. But they'd been diagnosed. Yeah. They'd been diagnosed, but they refused to believe it because they couldn't really feel any real symptoms. So, and that person went on to the cancer went to remission. He didn't go through the whole process in a negative sense. And he survived whatever it was. I can't remember specifically what it was, and went on to live a normal life. He was already in his 60s, but it didn't seem to. And so I suppose it echoes that, you know, the old saying of thinking positive, being positive as well, you know?
Yeah. And what's really interesting about that for me is, even though I was really, so I ended up in a situation where I really struggled to walk, you know, and to go from being actually quite active, to really not being able to walk, couldn't drive anymore, rarely left the house. It was really quite serious. And I think also when they say the palliative care team are going to get involved, instantly everyone panics. And my family did, and my friends did. And, you know, it's only recently that they told me that they didn't think I was going to make it through that year. So that was 2019.
Gosh!
But that never entered my head. I never once thought that this is it, I'm done. And my palliative care nurse used to say to me that he loved the way I just approached things, the way my mind seemed to work. I really worked hard with him to figure out my pain, describe what my pain was like, kept a pain journal, you know, and then he would figure out what the best medication was for that. And we'd try different butts. And I just stayed focused. I had a brilliant relationship with him where I trusted him. I listened to him and I felt like he gave me the tools to help me manage my illness. And this is like one of the most beautiful things for me was 7 months down the line, I drove my kids to school and it was the best thing, the best feeling in the world. And that sense of success, pride, just better than any money in the world, better than anything in the world was I got to drive my kids to school again when at one point, you know, we had things like spinal cord compression and the fear of what could happen with that and constantly getting infections and ending up in the hospital all the time. And, you know, there was even like some of the services I use are really quite beautiful. And one of them gave us a little kit for the kids. And it was like a house that you build. And it's got all these, it's got mom and dad and, you know, one child, the other child. And then it shows different places. So it's like the living room, the bedroom, but it's also got the hospital or the oncology unit. And it's so your child can move you to where you are. And it's because a lot of it's visual for children. So they would kind of move me around for, but it was also like a safety thing. So they always knew, well, she's there. Because it's really quite tricky when your kids, you know, when I was first diagnosed, they were 3 and 4. And for me, having your children grow up like that is quite tricky. And I recognized for a while that the guilt that I had about that, even though it was out of my control, it was awful. Like I used to look at them and it used to make me feel angry at myself. But one moment that I had where my daughter was 3 and she had to help me to the toilet because I had had chemo and it had just really affected me and there was no one else around. And she said, I can help. And she helped me along and I felt just disgraced. It was really shameful for me and just devastated. And I spoke to my uncle and he said, flip it on its head and look at the other side of it. You've got a child who's got empathy at 3 years old and is caring enough to want to help you to the toilet. And once he said that, I think it really changed my mindset. Not for everything, but because as they've grown up, I've just really felt like, God, this is your life, you know, and you've never really known anything other than cancer because now they're 10 and 12. But I feel really proud of the empathy they have and their kindness, and they have a real want to help people. So it's my little mantra that to find a little bits of joy in everything.
Absolutely.
And I suppose that's part of it for me.
Absolutely. Oh, you've got great children as well. Thank you for sharing that as well. I mean, it sounds like you've been through a lot. I mean, a great deal. you know, which is probably an understatement. And you're in remission now. Is that correct? Would that be right?
No, I've got incurable. So it's incurable and inoperable. I'm living with cancer. And it has spread since I was first diagnosed. But my last appointment, it was stable. So you kind of just live from appointment to appointment. And there's always a little bit of uncertainty. But I work really hard to keep my head straight. I do a lot of meditation, a lot of mindfulness. I've got a lot of support. And I've got great friends and a great family. And I just think that community is the best medicine sometimes.
Absolutely. You know? It's people you've got around you, isn't it? You know?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
And it's hard when you're a really independent person as well. I think it's really quite tricky to ask for help. And I've had to learn that too, because when I was first diagnosed, it was almost like I seen it as a dirty little secret I wouldn't let anyone tell. So my family knew, and my very close friends knew. But other than that, you know, at the school, anything like that, no one knew. And that was like a real lesson learned the hard way, because the impact that had on my friends and family, having to keep that, and also recognizing that it shouldn't have to be a secret, you know, and that was my pride. And that was me trying to be fiercely independent and I suppose beat cancer in a way. But you have to change your way of thinking on things sometimes.
Absolutely. And I think it's great that you've developed this. It sounds like you've got a natural knack for being positive anyway. You know, I think that's within you.
Yeah, I've always been quite like that. I just generally I find it easier to be more positive. Like it weighs heavy on me if I'm having a bad day or I feel really low. And I think all that energy, because I know how precious it is, because I've been so sick, I really know the preciousness, really, of, if that's a word, of being able to actually do things no matter how small. You know, there's nothing too small. And with the charity, I always say that because, you know, people are coming in with all sorts of problems and, you know, they're struggling to walk and they still want to help. So it's very much about there's always something you can do. So, you know, everyone will try and make a cup of tea, you know, just to contribute. And people teaching each other how to knit. We have a knit and natter group and they always laugh at me because I only natter. I don't knit. It's my better skill.
Oh, no worries. We're just going to go to a quick ad break and we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Save big money and start your spring project with help from Menards. We offer a huge selection of Bonnie plants, veggies, and herbs to plant at home and grow yourself. Right now, all Bonnie 4.5-inch vegetable and herbs are on sale through May 17th. Head to the Menards Garden Center to get your garden growing. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
So Sarah, thank you for sharing that, you know, about yourself and the past and what you've been through. Really appreciate that, you know. How would you describe palliative care?
For me, palliative care is an absolutely amazing service. For people who have incurable illnesses, like mine was care in the community, so they came out to my house. And it was just a lovely nurse comes to your house and checks in on you, but also the rest of the family. So that was something that was really much needed too, because it isn't all about the person who's unwell. It's about everyone. And I do try and share my experience because I think it's a little bit different. You know, I touched on my nurse giving me a toolkit to enable me how to describe the pain as best as possible. And it wasn't actually scary for me. it helped me to feel like all angles were being covered. He spent time talking to my mum when she came over and visited from Ireland. You know, he really took the time with her as well. And there was times when I would try and leave the room so he could speak to my husband on his own. He organised a counselling service for my kids. It's just a really wonderful service, and it really needs to be shouted about, because it's not just people who are in end-of-life care. You know, they really help with pain management. They help to signpost. They make sure the whole family's needs are being met during such a difficult time. The support of the palliative care nurse got me from a very uncertain time in life, when I was struggling to walk and in a lot of pain, to finding a new normal and getting pain under control. And I just think that people have this vision of the Grim Reaper turning up, you know, the minute it's like, oh, it's palliative, that's over. And it's not. What you generally find is one of the nicest and kindest people in the world come into your life, and you actually feel really lucky to have them there.
Absolutely. I think it's great, like you mentioned, that the palliative care team also look at your social network, people around you as well. Yeah. Because I think that's really important, because you're kind of, everyone's together and they're helping you, you're helping them, everyone's together. Do you see what I mean? And I think it's really nice that palliative care teams look at things holistically and they look at everybody, you know.
I just think that it isn't just happening to the person who's got the illness. And, you know, like I say, I handle things, you know, quite well, I think. Whereas some members of my family, they handle it really well, because a lot of the time they go the way that I am, but our personalities aren't exactly the same, so they handle it differently. And they need help too.
Absolutely. No, definitely. And sometimes some people might not want to show it in front of the person because they don't wish to unsettle them. But behind closed doors, they might be having their own challenges, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think they don't want to make it about themselves. But I lost my dad 2 years before I was diagnosed, and he had cancer, and it was quite a short illness. It was around 7 months. We had such hope that he was going to get better. And he didn't. And I really, and I know this might sound ridiculous to some people, but I'm very grateful that I have the experience of seeing what it was like from both sides, because I have a different understanding of the whole process, really. And it was almost like a bit of a gift, because my dad used to say, like, I'm okay, you know, just leave me, I'm fine. And you were thinking, oh, but he's not really, he's anxious and he just doesn't want us to worry. And then I got diagnosed, and then I realized he was okay. You know, he was managing. It was like just that different insight.
Right. And sorry to hear about your father as well. Gosh, so you've really kind of seen it from both sides, isn't it? Like, as a supporting network, and also the person that's going through it as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just, I think I really try and look at what is the best things to do for my family and for my friends and for me, you know, and just enjoy. I just want to enjoy what time I've got left, and just try and help as many people as I possibly can, really.
Absolutely. I think it's fantastic. You know, positive way of looking at things and moving forwards and trying to help, you know. Are there services out there for people that are, you know, they know someone or have a relative that's, you know, suffering in any way at all?
God, nothing springs to mind immediately. I know that McMillan have like a buddying system where they can like pair someone up with someone else who has maybe a little bit more experience. And I know there is counselling services as well, I'm never quite sure if the signposting is done, because if people don't take the palliative care because they're too afraid, they never get to find out about all these wonderful things that there are.
Of course. And I think, you know, everybody's different. Some people might not actually want to talk about it with other people.
Yeah.
They may feel better kind of internalizing, which I know is not the best of ways of doing it, but some people cope differently. And
yes, that's it. And you have to be really respectful of that. And one of the things at Sarah Starr that I felt really strongly about was, in a situation like that, you know, we are intending to, and we've created them, and it's journals where, you know, you can even decorate it yourself, but it's very much for someone who is potentially, you know, dying and they don't want to talk to their family, or their family feel like they're giving up if they want to talk about their death. So it's so that they can write all these things down, and they can say maybe what they want for their funeral, or what maybe they want to leave to someone. And then we can pass that book over when the time comes. So then it's nearly like a win-win situation, if that's possible to have.
Journals, I can't even explain or number the number of times I've done a show and journals come up. I've done various shows on so many different topics, and journals come up, and people have journals that discuss whatever subject it might be. And obviously it seems to be very, very useful, because I suppose it's kind of an outlet. It's somewhere to express maybe how you're feeling or what you're going through and that kind of thing.
Yeah, totally. I think it's a really good way. And the work that I do in meditation, we use different, you know, techniques. And sometimes she'll just say, what's bothering you? You've got 5 minutes to write about it. And it's amazing what pours out. Like, you've got an A4 page and you're like, oh my God, I didn't realize anything was bothering me, but obviously. So yeah, it's great. It's good for the happy things and it's good for the sad things.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Why is it important to discuss death and dying?
So for me, getting a diagnosis of incurable, I just had to change my outlook on things. And I suppose it's how you want to approach it, really, isn't it? And I got really interested in death cafes. So I'd read about them. And then that was my first project for Sarah Starr. So I started doing them before we got the charity registration. And I had some lovely friends who helped, and I had some lovely friends who made wonderful cakes. And we created a really nice atmosphere and brought people along. And we've got prompt cards that ask questions. And it's really important, because I wanted to talk about death and dying, because I don't know how soon, I don't know how much time I've got left, but I want that peace of knowing that I've gone out doing all the things I wanted to do with my head as straight as possible. But I wanted to be able to talk to my friends and family about it. So that was the real reason behind it. And then I recognized that there's so many people that are afraid. And I think just because you talk about something doesn't mean it's going to happen. You know, and so I want to raise awareness. I want people to think about the fact that you prepare for a birth, you prepare for parties, weddings, you know, you name it, we prepare for it. Why can't we prepare and plan more for our death? You know, it's the one thing that we have to do. And why not take some control and plan it? You know, say the nice things, say what you really want. And I've learned so much from the death cafes, you know, and listen to so many stories. And the majority of the time, the room is filled with laughter. People tell such wonderful stories. And they leave feeling quite joyous, you know, and it's just about considering. I'll give you an example of one of the questions that we use, and it's, who are funerals for? And I think when you've never thought about that, it's a huge question. Because some people say they're for the people who are left. Some people say they're for that person because it was important to them. It was part of their beliefs. But it leads off in different ways to so many different angles. And all of that fascinates me. And so really, I think by talking about it more, we can help to remove some anxiety from the unknown and give some closure to people.
Absolutely, absolutely. What support did you find most useful?
So after my first diagnosis and treatment, I ended up going to a group that was run by two clinical psychologists, and it was a support group for, but it was like a mindfulness group, and it was for people who had breast cancer. And it was quite a small group. And in that group, we all bonded because there was so much raw emotion in the room. And it was, we were all at the stage where we had finished our treatment and none of us knew what to do next. Because what you generally find is when you're going through treatment, you've got an appointment, appointment, appointment. And you just live from one appointment to the other. And then it's all wonderful finishing and ringing the bell and all that and the celebration. But that's when you really need everyone. And that's when most people disappear. Because that's when in life you don't know what to do. Because you've had this huge life-changing experience and you don't know how to explain it to other people. And so for me, the people in that room, we actually didn't even need to speak it. We all had this look. It was like a known look of, you get it, you get me. And so that was 6 years ago, and I still meet three of those ladies. Every now and again we meet and have a cuppa, and it was the best support because that bond is so special. And it lasted. You know, it's gone the dust. So it shows that it works.
Absolutely. And it's brilliant that you've got that kind of support around you, as well as family. Family are brilliant, but I think it's nice to have maybe someone a bit external sometimes, if that makes sense.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, because you feel like you're always coming with something really heavy. And I used to do that. So I wouldn't really talk about it, but because you're internalizing it, I used to say, oh, you must be sick of listening to me. And then my sister said, what do you mean? You don't talk about it. How can we be sick of listening to you? So yeah, it's that thing again, isn't it? The power of the mind.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're just going to another quick ad break and we'll be right back.
Mm-hmm. UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
So, Sarah, what are some of the coping strategies that you find work best?
Like I've said, I've got a really good support network. My family are my biggest champions, and my friends aren't far behind. I am really lucky. But I like walking, and if I can walk and talk, that's always a good one. Just getting outside, you know, I'm quite into earthing and just being by the sea, things like that. I'm lucky that I live near the coast, so I really, in the summer mostly, I like putting my feet in the sea. Just these things, I meditate every day. You know, that's really important. That's what keeps my head straight. And I really like to help other people as much as I can. And just by bringing, you know, creating different things in the charity, crafting, mindfulness, the knit and natter that I had said. And I also speak to a counsellor every few weeks or so. The oncology team as well, because I spent, you know, time there monthly. They're a fantastic team and they're also caring, and you feel the warmth the minute you walk in the door, really. So yeah, that it's, I'm very grateful, honestly. I think in a really dark time, I've been quite lucky to have found an amazing group of people everywhere, every place that I've kind of had to go to.
That's brilliant. No, absolutely. And apart from networking with people, getting outdoors is just great. I think I've heard from many people who are maybe unwell or whatever it might be, just being outside, because really it's in our genetics to be outside, you know, when you think about it.
I do love all that. I love all that kind of stuff, where it's like being recharged by the earth. And, you know, I know not everyone's a believer, but I just think if it's even placebo effect, I'll take it.
No, absolutely. Do you talk to other people that have maybe incurable illnesses at all?
Not particularly, to be honest with you. Yes, maybe a few people who have come to the Death Cafe, and people who come and use the service. Sorry, of course I do. I suppose I instantly thought about people just in the exact same situation as me, but other people who use the service, I do talk to them. But you generally find when people come in to use the space, they don't necessarily want to talk about it. You know, it's not the reason they came there. They came for that sense of purpose that, you know, they came to get away from it, a little bit of an escape, but to also be around people who get it and know what they're going through.
Mm-hmm. No, of course. What motivates you or inspires you?
People really inspire me. I think about all the things people can do. I'm always aware that a smile or showing some kindness can mean so much to someone in dark times. And knowing that you're not alone whenever you're going through something, it's a huge relief to know that you're not the only one. And my children inspire me a lot. You know, I look at how they navigate through life and having grown up with so much uncertainty with my illness. And I see the compassion that they have and the kindness that they show. And just knowing that there's something we can do to keep, that keeps me going, that there's something I can do. And I just think no matter how small, it matters. You know, putting a kettle on for someone, that matters. Just getting out of bed. You know, I just like to hope that everybody can leave their mark in the world in some way. And it doesn't always have to be a huge grand gesture. The little things mean so much more sometimes.
Of course. And it's true, isn't it? You know, those little things make the biggest of differences.
Yeah, totally.
You know, have you thought about writing a book? I just thought of that now while I was talking to you.
Do you know what? Not really, because my sister's really funny. So if anybody in the family is going to write a book, I always would push her to write a book because she's just got such a way of telling stories. And I suppose I have this real thing about not being a victim. And I worry that my story will come across as just another person who's got cancer or, you know, and I'm not saying that to be hurtful to anyone who has shared that story, but I'm just mindful. I don't know. Short answer, no.
No, that's fair enough. I was just thinking about everything, reflecting about everything that you said. And I thought, oh, I wonder if she's thought about writing a book, which is
maybe
fair
one
enough.
Day.
What's been the biggest surprise?
How our body works, what we can tolerate, how it attempts to repair itself. I've become fascinated by these things, just what can be done, all the different medications that are out there. What can keep you alive? And I'm so aware now of that we're nearing the point that cancer is being looked at as a chronic illness and something that people live with and don't die from. That's been a huge surprise to me. And even when I started on this treatment, they said it would probably only last 2 years, and I'm 4 years down the line. So, you know, it's working.
Absolutely, I think it's brilliant. You know, do you, because of the fascination with the body, do you read more about it?
Yes and no. I am terrible because I am a Googler. So if something comes up, I will Google it. I kind of help myself, and I am very much knowledge is power. So, but I don't read medical books. I'm not, you know, I'm not that level. But I just get really interested. And just like little bits, like recently I heard that the adolescent brain isn't fully formed now until you're 25. And that just blew my mind. And I don't even know if that's true or not. Like, I've heard it and I keep telling people, and then I'm like going, that might not even be true. And I'm going about being like, it's fascinating.
Absolutely. I've got to say, I'm guilty of, you know, reading on Google and YouTubing things and, you know, just generally about health, and people can get really carried away with it, you know?
Oh, totally. Because I remember I had a juicing book when I was pregnant the first time, and I thought, oh, I wonder, should I just juice everything now? And I did look at and do different diets, and I realized that they all contradict each other. And I just thought, do you know what? I'm just going to go on the way that I'm going, keep going how I'm going. Something's working. So.
Absolutely. Sometimes you've got to follow your gut, haven't you? Your gut feeling.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not that easy when you're on different medication and like steroids. God, when you're on steroids, sometimes you're like really, really hungry. You just want to eat everything. And it feels very out of control. So I think if you were trying to restrict yourself, it would make you a lot more frustrated when it comes to something like that.
Right, of course. I see. That actually makes me think, has your appetite changed because of the medication or what you eat or anything like that?
Yeah, well, first time around, my taste changed completely. And when I went down for my first intravenous strip chemo, they were serving vegetable soup. And I could not eat vegetable soup for a good 2 years after that because the smell of it used to just knock me sick. It's just little things. And I also don't know if that's in your mind, but I get like a real craving for salty foods. That's probably the biggest thing I have at the minute. I notice that regularly. Might be an excuse, just eat junk food.
So, has your idea of success changed?
Completely. So I used to think, I worked for Siemens. I was a marketing executive and I really liked my job. I was happy there. And I suppose I just thought it's about the travel, it's about the house, you know, your job, just wealth, really. And now sometimes success changes daily. It can be getting out of bed. You know, spending time with my favorite people, that's always a big success for me. And then the real success is just the support I have around me. I'm so rich in love. And I feel it, you know, and I think that gets me through so much. I'm really, really grateful. I have to try and think on that rather than think about what I don't have, really.
Of course, absolutely. It's gratitude, isn't it? Just appreciating.
Yeah. Totally.
You know, appreciating what people around you, what you have and that kind of thing. You know,
and it's them little moments of joy, finding the little moments of joy in everything that you do. And it's possible to do that. It really is.
Absolutely. I think sometimes we get so carried away in our daily lives and we're all guilty for it. You know, the hustle and bustle, 9 to 5, etc., all the rest of it, whatever it might be. And it's just sometimes it's more difficult. You know, it's easier said than done, basically. But just slow down and just think, oh, you know, while this is going on, or this might be a negative, but at least you've got these positives.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny as well, though, because I am saying that. And I remember thinking, oh, well, you know, I'll never have road rage again and I won't sweat the small stuff and all that. And then I realized you're only human. You know, we're all going to have these moments. We're all going to get angry. You know, it's realizing that too. We are only human at the end of the day.
Absolutely. Can you share any lessons learned?
It's best not to do it alone. And if you can get support, take it. I'd already said about how private I was the first time around. And, you know, I thought that I was doing the right thing. But when I look back at my family and how really hard that was on them, I feel really bad about it because they were carrying such a burden and they were all really suffering. But community is the best medicine, definitely. And just use your people. And just because you're an independent person, it doesn't mean you can't ask for help.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. What was it that the initial idea in terms of setting up the charity, where did it come from? At what point?
Well, it was when it actually happened not long after I did my will. And I thought, this can't be it. I'm not done yet. There's something more I can do. And it's also that sense of purpose. And taking ill health retirement at 38 was just so far from the plan. And it's very much about focusing on what you can do. And it's for all the people with incurable and palliative illnesses, you know, as well as their family and friends and the NHS. That's, I looked at everyone who supported me and helped me, and I just thought, what can I do? How can I help? You know, and I try and do things as well, like go and speak to medical students or clinical psychologists and let them ask me questions, because I think it's quite valuable to speak to someone who's got lived experience. And I've built up a really good relationship too with, you know, my own medical team and you know, other people at the university now too. But the charity's a lifeline. It's my legacy to my family, to my friends. And I think if I really get down to it and think about the time when I'm not going to be here, I now have the vision of, I've created the vision of where they can go, you know, and where they can feel me and feel the good work that I've tried to do, really. So yeah, it's just a way to escape all the medical things, all the tough things. But it's more than that. This charity just means everything. And I see from people who are coming in, I'm watching people come in, and I'm watching them grow in confidence, and I'm seeing them find their spot, and seeing them recognize that they're not finished yet. And also they're now, people are starting to ask to run their own classes. And these are people who haven't worked for a long time, and it's inspiring them to, you know, pick up a pen, do some creative writing, do something creative. And yeah.
I think it's brilliant. Do you work with other charities as well?
Yeah, I'm always happy to collaborate. You know, I'm not precious about things like that. I think if we're all in it for the same reason, you know, there's a few local charities and we get on really well and we try and do things together. And so I've been invited to some of their courses or to have stalls at some of their events and that. So, yeah, there's quite a few in the Northeast that are quite a close-knit group. So it's actually really nice to see that, how supportive everyone is rather than people just competing, because I just don't think that's helpful, especially when you've all got the same end goal.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Will you be marketing, that's a big word, marketing. Will you be raising more awareness for your charity?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm like, because I'm originally from Northern Ireland, I've got a lot of support in Northern Ireland. So I really want to branch out there and start helping. And I'm doing it at the minute by offering like online meditation courses and sending over some little craft kits so that people can make them, and anything else that we can do online, we'll share that as well. But yeah, the big dream is to go national eventually. And, you know, we've come a long way since January. So it's my baby and I just love it. And it really keeps me going. It's so nice. It's as lovely for me as it is for everybody else.
No, that's fantastic. Does your lived experience reflect the media's portrayal of cancer?
Most of the time it doesn't. And, you know, you always see in TV and films, the person's lost loads of weight and they've got no hair and they're vomiting all the time. And, you know, there's this like, it makes it all really dark and gloomy. You know, and I had the opposite. You know, I put on weight. I did lose my hair, but the oncology unit that I went to was so peaceful, so serene, and the people are just amazing. You know, and I was never vomiting. I was nauseous, but it just wasn't the same. And I think cancer and treatment affect everyone very differently, and I'm always so aware, and I say this to my kids, everyone is unique. No two people have the same of anything, really. You know, unless you're identical twins, where there's a lot to be different there. But I can understand too why it happens, and it's just generalized, doesn't it? But, you know, I also look at the way the media portray it as in, you know, making people out to be victims. And I know it's awful, but I suppose with me being so hell-bent on what I can do, I just have this real thing about not being a victim, because I don't want cancer to be the only thing people are going to remember me for, because that's not it. You know, And I suppose that's maybe where I have my little hang-ups with things like that. And I just think that you don't really see either how it's affecting the wider family. And especially, like I'd said, I've seen it from both angles, and I found it much harder watching my dad in such a terrible way than it is going through it myself. You know, it's just, it's interesting, but yeah, it's tough.
Sarah, thank you for today. It's been really insightful, very useful. You know, if people want to reach out to you, are you on social media? Can people contact you?
Yeah, we've got our website, and it's just sarahs-star.org. And then we're on Facebook and Instagram and LinkedIn and Twitter. So, yeah, it won't be too hard to find us.
Fantastic. Thank you again for your time today. Really appreciate
Thank you.
That.
Thank you so much for having me. I've really enjoyed it.
It's a pleasure having you on the show. And thank you to our listeners. You know where you can find me on Instagram at GavinJ417. Until next time, take care.